Hare Hare
Jayo Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Jayo Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Jayo Radha
Sa Paravidikacharya Osutera Satashi Shimad, His Divine Grace. Abhaya Channa Dabhaktivananda Gosami Marashila Prabhupad Kijai. Iskan Founder Acharya Shila Prabhupad Kijai. Ananda Goti Voisna Vrindikajai Namacharya Shila Huidas Thakur Kijai. Ram Se Kahoshi Krishna Chaitanya. Rava Nityananda Shidwaita Garadha Shibasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindikajaya Shishi Radhakrishna Gopi Govinda Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijaya Vrindhavanam Kijaya Churam Kijaya Jagannatha Swami Kijaya Vudamai Kijaya Shimani Lasi Devi Kijaya Samveda Bhakta Vrindikajaya Gaur Premananda Hari. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, so today is the combined appearance days of Srila Jiva Goswami and Lord Vamanadev. So first we'll speak about Jiva Goswami because Krishna becomes most pleased when we glorify his devotees more than when we glorify him directly. And Jiva Goswami is a very important devotee. So, Jiva Goswami is the nephew of Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. And his father's name was Anupama. I don't have any information about his mother's name. But when his father and Rupa and Sanatan left, he was left in the care of his mother. I guess his father pretty much renounced everything, too. Whatever. So, Jiva Goswami in his ontological feature is known as Vilas Mundri. Mundri is like a prepubescent young girl who assists Radha and Krishna in many intimate ways. In one sense, more intimate than the Sakis, because they're very, very young girls, innocent girls. Of course, everyone in the spiritual world is innocent. You can't say that someone is not innocent. So, from his very birth, he worshipped Radha and Krishna deities. And he would have constant dreams of dancing with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda as a little boy. And he always felt separation from his father and his two uncles, Rupa and Sanatan. So he was just like intense. Of course, he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was a baby in this place called Ramakeli. Ramakeli is where Rupa and Sanatan first met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that's where they approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a very humble mood with straw in their teeth. That's a tradition in some parts of India. Put straw in your teeth, it means you're just a humble servant. And they were initiated at that particular point. It was a quick initiation. No need for tests or anything like that. Like that in ISKCON, you know, you have to be a pure devotee before you get recommended and at least give 90% of your income to Krishna consciousness in some temples. So anyway, so when he grew up, he went to Navadvip to meet Lord Nityananda. And he met Lord Nityananda at Srivast Thakur's house, and he was fed by Sachibanta. Then Lord Nityananda took him on the Navadvip Mandal Parikrama. Best person to take you on the Navadvip Mandala Parikrama. And he saw Lord Chaitanya's places of pilgrimage and all the other things in Navadvip. Then Lord Nityananda sent him to Kashi, which is interesting. Kashi is the place of Lord Shiva. And why did he go to Kashi? Because there was this one devotee there, Madhusudana Vachaspati, who was a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now, we know Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the most educated scholar in Jagannath Puri, and he was converted by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the personalist understanding of the Lord. It's interesting, even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, before he took Lord Chaitanya's association, was an impersonalist. And he was... It shows that even many of the people associated with the temple in Jagannath Puri are impersonalists. Yeah. Because he was like very closely, he was like the advisor to the king. And the king was in charge of the temple. So there, you know, he's an impersonalist. And then eventually, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had this whole discussion with him about this, the Atmarama verse and other things. And he basically defeated. The whole story is that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to teach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu how to be a proper sannyasi. So he thought, you know, Lord Chaitanya, you should hear Vedanta Sutra for me for 7 days. So he taught Lord Chaitanya for 7 days about Vedanta Sutra, and after the 7 days he asked Lord Chaitanya, what have you understood? And Lord Chaitanya said, I didn't understand anything you said. I understand Vedanta Sutra. And then he began to speak about the Vedanta Sutra and defeated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became a great devotee at that time. So sometimes you go to a holy place and people actually don't believe in God. They actually think that, you know, they're worshiping the deity, but that's to get detached from the material world and ultimately merge into the deity. Crazy. But you'll see that. I mean, most of the, well, other than South India, I would say, because South India, they're quite educated. But North India, and even in Orissa, a lot of the pandits or bandits, or bandits, is probably said that, and Brahmins, if you actually ask them to explain things philosophically, they really don't have a firm grasp on the philosophy. I mean, they can recite thousands of mantras, but as far as understanding who Krishna is, they may not understand. So anyway, so Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's student instructed Srila Jiva Goswami in Sanskrit grammar and rhetoric. And then after that, he was sent to Vrindavan to associate with Srila Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And Rupa Goswami actually gave him the original deity of Radha Damodar. Some descriptions say that Rupa Goswami fashioned this particular deity.
Hand carved or something.
Yes. Some people say hand carved or at least supervised, because it's a brass deity. You can't hand carve the deity. But sometimes you can hand carve the original mold or model for the deity. You know, there's an interesting way that they make brass. They make like a straw, sort of straw and mud figure. And then they have a mold in which, when they make the mold, it dissolves the straw and mud, but it, you know, it leaves the inside of the mold, and then they pour the brass into it later on. There's a whole process for doing that. So anyway, so he was given the deity by Srila Rupa Goswami, and he was proofreading Rupa Goswami's books like the Vidagdha Madhava, Lita Madhava, and he became a very he became a very menial servant to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. So this is actually the position of a bona fide disciple. What happened to our brahmachari?
Maurice died.
No, that's all right. No, he needs his beauty rest. Maybe he's sick. Because it was intense for him, you know, going around like
and
that.
And the timing as well, like.
Yeah, he's still jet-lagged. So anyway, let him chill out. I was just thinking of disciples and brahmacharis. And so, yeah. Kali Yuga, the grahasthas are actually more surrendered. No, he's a good devotee. Everything is reversed. So anyway, so what happened is eventually he accepted Srila Rupa Goswami as his guru. And took initiation from Rupa Goswami. So there's a famous story of a pundit called Rupa Narayana. And this Rupa Narayana pundit, he was one of these type of Digvijaya pundits. Digvijaya means he would be always challenging other pundits or other scholars to debates. And this is actually a tradition in Bengal. In different states of India, you actually have different psychophysical natures. We were talking about this in the car, that it's not that everybody's the same genetically. Although, you know, according to political correctness now, everybody is the same. You know, everybody's the same Varna, you know, whatever. But it's not like that. You know, some people have good brains, some people have good arms, some people have good legs. I mean, for example, we were talking yesterday about people who run marathons. And you see, the people who run marathons, usually from Africa, the people who win, and they have really long legs.
I can throw.
And they win. And I wouldn't even attempt to run that. Run against them, isn't it? So, you know, everybody's different genetically. Everybody's different. I mean, so guna karma vibhagasha, we have to understand that everybody has different qualities and work like that. and we have to respect the difference and respect that anybody and any who has any particular nature can become completely Krishna conscious. So in Bengal, getting back to the point, this was very prominent because the Bengalis were very intelligent, but also the Bengalis were very short. So they couldn't defend themselves very well if there was a fight. So that's why you have this whole story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that there was a Bengali associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was Balabhadra Bhattacharya, who had accompanied Lord Chaitanya to Vrindavan. And then there was a Rajput too. And so what happened is that these Patans, soldiers, thought that because Lord Chaitanya was unconscious due to ecstasy. So that they thought that they had given him these, his associates, Lord Chaitanya's associates had given him dutura, like poison. And so they tried to arrest Lord Chaitanya's associates, so this Bengali was just shaking like this. And the Rajput was saying, I have soldiers here, they're going to attack you, just like, it's bold. So everybody has a different nature, isn't it? You see certain parts of India, people are really good baniyas. And other parts, they're scholars. I mean, it's really interesting. It's not, you just can't make everything one, even materially. I mean, everyone has equal rights, everyone has equal opportunities, we love everybody, but we all have different vehicles. Like, he has a Prius. And you have a what?
Toyota.
Just an ordinary Toyota. You're just a regular guy. It's just like you can't make one type of car the same as every other type of car, right? So, we all have different vehicles. We do different things. That's the understanding of Varnashram. One of the duties of the spiritual master is to ascertain the psychophysical nature of the disciple and give them advice accordingly. Psychophysical means the body you have. Like that, like a Prabhupada wouldn't tell me to become an athlete. Isn't it? It's not my nature. I want you to run in the Olympics. But Prabhupada, I come in last, So, anyway, so we have to understand that. So in Bengal, getting to the point, there's a typical Bengali thing. You have these Digvijayas. And he went to Vrindavan, even though Vrindavan is not Bengal, but it's filled with Bengalis. Like Radhakund is a Bengali village, basically, Bengali widows there. So he went to Vrindavan, and he challenged Rupan Sanatan Goswami. And Rupan Sanatan Goswami, they basically said, "You win." They didn't want to waste their time with this person. Why are you going to waste your time? So they signed this Jayapatra, which is a certificate of victory. And he was going around showing everyone, "See, I defeated Rupan Sanatan Goswami's." Oh, Nanda Braj. Whoop. You all right? All right. So he defeated, he thought he defeated Rupan Sanatan Goswami, and he was bragging about it. Then he went to Jiva Goswami and he said, "Look, see, I defeated your uncles." And Jiva Goswami said, "Well, you haven't defeated me." And this is the proper attitude to defend the reputation of his uncles. We're not interested in defending our own reputation. Who cares? But defending the reputation of a great Vaishnava or people you love is very important. So, for 7 days, he argued with Rupa Narayan. excuse me. And it's described that after 7 days, Rupa Narayan had a call of nature. He's pretty upset, So then, he was banished. Rupa Narayan left. But then Jiva Goswami went to Rupa Goswami, his guru, and said, "Look what I have done. I taught this rascal a lesson." And Rupa Goswami basically said, "You're really not qualified to be a sannyasi." you know, if you're bragging or have this pride, you just should leave Vrindavan. So he went to Mathura, and he lived, as described, in a tree, like in a hollow of a tree. And this was for some time. After some time, Sanatana Goswami, who was considered to be Rupa Goswami's guru because he was senior, went to Rupa Goswami and said, "Rupa Goswami, oh my dear brother Rupa, you are disobeying one of the orders of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." And Rupa Goswami said, "Which order am I disobeying?" He went through the different instructions and finally came to the one, Jiva Doya, compassion for Jiva souls, which can be understood two ways. Compassion for all Jiva souls or compassion for Jiva Goswami. Mm-hmm. So Rupa Goswami understood this and he said, "Okay, you can come back." So another point about Jiva Goswami is that he basically taught the Swakya Ras rather than Parakya Ras. Actually, if you read his Gopal Champu, he does also teach Parakya Ras in the Gopal Champu. But anyway, because his disciples, Prabhupada commented that his disciples, many of them, weren't quite mature enough to understand the Parakya Ras. Now, Parakya means like so-called, not illicit, but, you know, a relationship with someone who is not your wife, you know, Parakya. Para means like transcendental, not transcendental exactly, but outside of the norm. Parakya. Swakya. Swa means one's own. And then Parakya. This material world, this Parakya Ras, is the most abominable. But the Swakya is accepted in this world. But in the spiritual world, the Parakya is actually considered the highest because it's reflection. So anyway, so he was teaching Swakya rather than Parakya, primarily because his disciples were not advanced enough, or many of them were not. I'm not saying all of them. Another thing he did was he arranged for the Emperor Akbar, who was very equal. He was very much equal to all the different religions. In fact, Akbar was trying to do something, synchronism, which means combine all the religions into one, so everybody could feel good, you know, because he was concerned. He was a mogul, but he was still very concerned with all this fighting between the Hindus and the Muslims. He thought, you know, let's just put everything together, synchronize, syncretism is called, synchronize everything, and just, you know, whatever the Muslims can't accept, the Hindus should just, like, not do that or do it secretly and et cetera with the Muslims. So he was trying his best. He would have meetings, in fact, with different scholars. And he was quite friendly with Srila Jiva Goswami. So Srila Jiva Goswami took him to Nidibon one time. That means where Radha and Krishna, they sleep. Nidibon means a forest of sleeping, basically. You been to Nidibon?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very nice. And there's actually a bed there, Radha and Krishna. You've seen that?
Yeah, inside it,
a small bed. Yeah, small bed, a little temple there.
And slowly.
With flowers,
yeah. And so he took him to Nidibon, and he actually arranged for a vision for Akbar. So Akbar had a vision of Radha and Krishna by the mercy of Srila Jiva Goswami. So pure devotees can do that. They can just give you a vision. Then it goes away. Anyway, because you have to become pure yourself to keep it there. And so Akbar became so, let's say, overwhelmed after this vision. He helped to construct many, many temples in Vrindavan. And that's actually why he gave money and helped the Goswamis construct temples. Of course, later on we had our friend Aurangzeb try to destroy the temples. You know, you had a terrible story. So, another story about Jiva Goswami is he had a debate in Agra about what was more glorious, the Yamuna or the Ganges. And he defeated the person. He proved that the Yamuna is more glorious than the Ganges because the Yamuna is the wife of Krishna, consort of Krishna. Anyway. And he also made Akbar promise never to hunt in Braj, Because Akbar, you know, even though he was very much interested in religion, he was a, I wouldn't say he was a Kshatriya because he was a Mughal, but at least he was a king and kings hunted. And he actually taught Shyamananda, Narottama Das Thakur, and Sri Vasacharya. He was their Siksha Guru. He established the Radha Damodara Temple, in which Srila Prabhupada stayed in. He appeared in year approximately 1513 and left this world in 1598. And you'll actually see that the properties around Radhakund are in the name of Srila Jiva Goswami. Because even though Raghunath Das Goswami was the acharya there, Raghunath Das Goswami was very much fearful of getting back into the same scenario he had when he was young with his family, because his family was extremely rich. So he didn't want to deal with money or property or anything. So Jiva Goswami took care of that. Now, finally, I'm going to tell you about the Shatsandarbhas of Srila Jiva Goswami, which are considered to be the topmost philosophical expositions, not only on Krishna consciousness, but on knowledge itself. Beginning with, it's called the Shatsandarbha, it's called the Bhagavad Sandarbha, beginning with the Tattva Sandarbha. So the Tattva Sandarbha is actually deals with something called epistemology. Epistemology basically means, how do you know what you know? Like, in the Isopanishad, Prabhupada deals with this extensively. In the beginning, actually, I think it's the introduction of the Isopanishad. He talks about, first of all, he talks about the frailties of the conditioned soul. We've mentioned that previously, you know, the imperfect senses, tendency to cheat, tendency to be an illusion, tendency to make mistakes, which we all have. And then he talks about the descending process and the ascending process. He talks about induction. He talks about deduction. Induction means that we look at the world and we come to, let's say, general conclusions based upon limited experience. In other words, and sometimes the conclusion is true, but it's not a perfect method of attaining knowledge. For example, if I just, based on my own experience, I say, well, this person died, this person died, this person died, that person died, therefore everyone's going to die. It's true. But the methodology of arriving at that conclusion is not a perfect methodology. You know, there may be a person who doesn't die, like Krishna, for example. You know, or you know, an example of a induction that arrives at an imperfect conclusion is that everyone is faulty that I've met. Everyone makes mistakes. But I haven't met Krishna. And Krishna doesn't make mistakes. So, but because I haven't met him, I've come to a faulty conclusion based upon induction. This is induction. And then also, another thing that's quite common in any field of knowledge, material field of knowledge, or even spiritual field, is like axioms. Axiom means self-evident truth. Things like things are equal to each other. You know, equal things are equal to each other. Yeah, I mean, that's an axiom. Just like the scientists, when they study life, they actually start with an axiom that's not proper. And that axiom is that everything comes from matter. Mm-hmm. It's called methodological naturalism or methodological atheism. You understand? Mm-hmm. They actually approach things from that particular standpoint. You know, in other words, that's an assumption they make. You have to make assumptions when you do anything, but sometimes your assumptions are actually wrong. Mm-hmm. You understand? They're not considering. Yes. There's a possibility there's a creator or designer. So their assumption is wrong, and they're basing all their conclusions on that faulty assumption. Like in mathematics, if you have one mistake in the whole, let's say you're deriving something through a whole series of mathematical equations, then that one mistake, even at the beginning, throws off your conclusions at the end. The whole thing is useless. So that's called an axiom. So anyway, so getting back to the point. So the Bhagavad Sandarbha deals with, the Tattva Sandarbha deals with this epistemology. How do you know what you know? And ultimately, it even talks about Pratyaksha.
Anuman.
Yeah, Anuman is induction like that. And Pratyaksha means direct perception. And sometimes we perceive, Prabhupada talks about this also in the Upanishad, that we perceive things, that's why I was talking about the four faults of the conditioned soul. We perceive things that aren't there, like a mirage in the desert. Or sometimes we don't perceive things that are there. So, so he talks about Pratyaksha. And then he also talks about what to do if there's some conflict between Shabda, that means the Shastra, and Pratyaksha. And sometimes you'll find some conflict there. I mean, for example, like the whole moon thing. You know, you hear, gone to the moon, we haven't gone to the moon. And then you look, the moon's there, it's round. You measure the distance, the scientists say this. You know, how do you deal with that? I'm not going to get into that controversy right now. But in any case, he proves ultimately that Srimad Bhagavatam is the most authoritative evidence according to the absolute truth. So the second Sandarbha is also called the Bhagavat Sandarbha, is the distinction between the impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. And it describes the spiritual world and the mode of goodness, something about deity worship, Krishna's potencies, his form, his pastimes, etc. The third one is called the Paramatma Sandarbha, and there he has a description of the Supersoul, obviously, and how the Supersoul exists in everyone's heart. There are differences between the different incarnations and the different tattvas of Torah, like the living entities, Maya, the material world, and the theory of transformation. That's something interesting. Theory of transformation means that Krishna transforms his energies. The Mayavadis, they say, it's called Parinam. Parinam is the word for transformation in Sanskrit. The Mayavadis say that God becomes transformed into the living entities, into the material world. That's Parinam Vada. And we say that the energies of the Lord become transformed in different ways. Just like material energy, when Krishna glances at it, it's pradan first, and then it becomes transformed and becomes variegated. So that's a description there. There's a discussion of the Leela, the avatar incarnations, and then Bhagavan, how Krishna has all these six qualities. The fourth Sandarbha is called the Krishna Sandarbha, and there he proves Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there it talks about the Purusha avatars, Goloka Vrindavan, the coward boys, the associates of Krishna, the queens of Dwarka, the super excellent position of the gopis, and a list of the gopis' names, and a discussion about Srimati Radharani. It's nice. The fifth Sandarbha is called the Bhakti San Sandarbha, and that's about devotional service, how the self becomes manifest through the process of bhakti, discussion of happiness, discussion of differences between the Mahabhagavat and the ordinary devotee, and Raghunuga Bhakti, description of Raghunuga Bhakti. And the sixth Sandarbha is called the Pritisan Sandarbha. That's a thesis on love of God. And there it's stated that through love of God, one can actually become perfectly liberated and attain the highest goal of life. And then he talks about the distinction between the personalist and the impersonalist. And then he talks about overlapping between different rasas. That means rasabhas, of course. And then the basic ras theology, shanta, dasha, sakya, vatsalya, madhurya, and sambhog. That means sambhog, meeting between Radha and Krishna, and or between the devotees and Krishna, and also Vipralamba, and then ultimately talks about Srimati Radharani, and that's the eulogy of Goswami. Okay. So, then we will go to Lord Vamanadev. It's his appearance today. So, once upon a time, there was this whole story about Lord Nrsimhadev killing Hiranyakashipu. So, after he killed Hiranyakashipu, he told Prahlad Maharaj, "Don't worry, I am not going to kill any of your family members from now on." So, of course, Prahlad Maharaj's son was Virochan, and then after that, there was Bali Maharaj. And so, actually, there was another. Bali also had a son. Does anyone know what his son's name was? Banasura. And he wasn't killed by Krishna. Krishna did some arm amputation.
Krishna.
What?
And his daughter is married to his son.
Yeah. Yes, that's the Usha Aniruddha story. Very romantic story involving the mystic yogini Chitraleka. Did you know?
Krishna book.
Yeah. You know about that. And the Krishna book story. She transported Aniruddha to Usha. Very romantic. So awkward. Bali Maharaj was fighting with the demigods, and he lost the battle, and he got killed. And then his guru, Shukracharya, who had this mantra, Mrityu Sanjeevani, there's actually an interesting story in the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata about this, that Shukracharya taught this mantra to the son of Brihaspati. Did you know that? And but the son of Brihaspati couldn't use it because he was cursed by Devayani. You don't know the story?
Yeah,
he was cursed by Devayani because she fell in love with him and he didn't want anything to do with her. Anyway, it's a whole story. I'm not going to tell the story because it's not about Bali Maharaj. But Shukracharya revived Bali Maharaj and then he started to worship Shukracharya very enthusiastically, performed a sacrifice, and he was given, Prahlad Maharaj actually was backing him up, which is interesting. Because actually the demons, let me explain this, the demons keep the demigods Krishna conscious. Without opposition, you know, if everything goes well, then how are you're not going to think about Krishna. Just like I oftentimes give the example of Hawaii, which Prabhupada said is the most, if there's any nice place in the material world, it's Hawaii. So if you go there, well, I told the devotees before, I used to be GBC there, and I sat down for Bhagavatam class, and everyone was surfing. Where are all the brahmacharis? Oh, it surfs up. Guru Maharaj, you know. So, it's quite an amazing place. It's like left. One time I think Prabhupada even said it's left over from Satya Yuga. You know, basically, don't become attracted to go there. And that was much better than Fiji as far as the climate, the vegetables, everything. It's like, you thought you've gone back to Godhead when you go there. Anyway, so, without Krishna. So, Prahlad Maharaj actually blesses Bali Maharaj and gives him a garland of victory, you know. So he gives him a garland to become victorious and says, "Be victorious." And this is over the demigods. Anyway, so Bali did 100 horse sacrifices, took over heaven. And Prahlad Maharaj is there agreeing with the whole thing the whole time. Because those demigods needed to be taught a lesson. Isn't it? I mean, you talk about the demigods and demons, you know, they're different families, but some of the demons, they're quite nice. I mean, like you have a Rakshasa is one of the greatest devotees. What's his name? You know? Vibhishan. I thought you were from Fiji. You know, he's a great devotee of Lord Ram. And a monkey. What's a monkey's name?
Hanuman.
Okay, good. Please remember that thing. So many of the demons, they're actually good devotees. And many of the demigods, they're devotees, but they're Sakama devotees generally. Like Indra, you know, with Gautama Rishi's wife, Ahalya. Even stealing the horses from King Prithu as he was performing the horse sacrifices. You know, they're pretty challenged generally. So, forgive me, Indra. I mean, Sakama. I mean, they're great devotees, greater than me, okay? Thank you. They're greater than me. But, you know, they have some tinge, generally. Except for, there's some exceptions. Yamaraj, of course, is a pure devotee. So there's many pure devotees amongst them. Like any group of devotees. Any group of devotees, sometimes they do material things. So what happened is Aditi, who is the mother of demigods and mother of Indra, of course, she became completely depressed because her sons didn't have their house anymore, you know, their palace, their place, their position. And so she went to Kashyapa Muni, her husband, and Kashyapa advised her in this system called Payovrata, that you live just by drinking milk and you do particular vows at certain times of the day. And eventually, when she did that, Lord Vishnu appeared with four arms and he said, "Worship your husband." Good instruction for the ladies. And he said, "My plenary portion is within your husband." So the plenary portion in Kashyapa, her husband, was transferred into Aditi's womb. And Lord Brahma came and he was praying to the Lord of the womb of Aditi. And at the time of birth, the Lord exhibited four arms. And he was born on the Shravana Dwadasi, which is sometimes called the Vijaya Dwadasi, which means victorious Dwadasi. That's today. He wasn't born on the Ekadasi, although we fast on the Ekadasi, which you're not supposed to fast on the Dwadasi. Then immediately he changed into a very small dwarf form, and he was given a sacred thread from Brahaspati, and the demigods offered him all sorts of gifts. It's described in the Bhagavatam, he exhibited his Brahman effulgence. He became very bright. And immediately went to the sacrifice by Bali. So it's also described in the Bhagavatam and other literatures, when the demigods were born, there's no like babies hanging around there. It's just like immediately their adults form. So the parents miss their childhood. I mean, it's actually better. It saves time. Even the Rakshasas, you know, Gato Kach, when he was born, it's just right there, Bhim saying, you know, he was a baby first, but Bhim saying took some blood and he dripped it on Gato Kach, and Gato Kach immediately. He became a giant Rakshasa, yeah. There's advantages to not being a human being, you know. So then he went to the sacrifice being done by Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj washed his feet and he said, "What do you want? I'll give you anything you want." That was the tradition. If a Brahmin came to your house, whatever he asked for, you had to give. He said, "I can provide you with a wife, the land, riches, etc." And Lord Vamana, before he asked for anything, he started to glorify Bali's ancestors, like Hiranyakashipu and other ancestors. Of course, Hiranyaksha, Pallad, he said they were very powerful. And he said to Bali, "I only want 3 steps of land." And Bali said, "This is not so intelligent. You can have anything in the universe you want. You know, I'm basically the boss of the universe here. Just ask for something." And Lord Vamanadeva said, "If I'm not satisfied with 3 paces of land, I will not be satisfied with anything. And you actually see that. Abritam gyanam etena gyanino nichabhayana kamarupena kontiya dusprena lenacha. That you always want more, and it appears to satisfy you when you get that more thing. But then it becomes further inflamed and there's another thing. Isn't it? Like a child, for example, wants a gadget, they want a gadget, and then they get it and they play with it. Oh no, there's another gadget. There's another gadget. And you think that's the end of it. Or like you ladies with saris.
Gold.
Yeah, ornaments. They look at it. When I get that, it'll make me so happy. My dear husband, please get it for me. It'll make me happy. And then he gave it to her and she smiled. So he loved me. And then a week later, she wants something else. You know? Another sorry. I said, I just got you sorry last week. But that was last week. It's just like eating, too. You know, you eat, you say, oh, I'm satisfied. And you wake up the next day, oh, I want more. It's something like that. So Lord Brahmadev was using that argument. And so Bali basically agreed. He took out his water pot to signify that he was, he put some water in the palm, that he was actually going to give this particular benediction. Shukracharya said, no, it's Vishnu. He's going to take everything away. But Bali was thinking, previously he was asking me to worship Vishnu. He was worshiping Vishnu. Shukracharya was asking him to worship Vishnu, but for material things. But when Vishnu wanted to take everything away, it's something similar, like some of our members sometime, that, they come to the temple, Jayatagadisha Hare Swami Jayatagadisha. Anyway, they come to the temple and worship Krishna. And then if one of their children wants to be a devotee, is it? And we had a lot of experience like that. One of their children said, Daddy, I'd like to become a devotee. they may be even initiated themselves. But isn't it true? The child wants to become a devotee, Krishna's taking everything away. Krishna, you can have a little donation on Janmashtami, that's okay. But my son, my house, everything is mine. Isn't it? So you see that same sort of consciousness that Shukracharya had. Shukracharya said, no. He said, charity is not good if it endangers one's welfare. It's better to lie. Lie means not keeping your promise at this particular point. He said, forgive me, this is Shukracharya, this is not me speaking. He says, lying is okay if you're flattering a woman. This is from the Bhagavatam, it's not from me. this is not my opinion, this is Bhagavatam's opinion. Or no, this is Shukracharya's opinion. He says, lying is okay if you're flattering a woman, you're joking in marriage, earning money, protecting life, cows, and Brahmins. I would agree with some of them, protecting life, cows, Brahmins. Earning money, yes, Prabhupada said the same thing. Sometimes you have to tell like a little lie for you, there's no profit. Joking, yes, too. But marriage, you shouldn't be lying. Anyway, so they're flattering. We're not supposed to flatter people from Brahmins. Anyway, so he was giving an excuse or trying to give an excuse to Bali Maharaj. So the Bali Maharaj wouldn't keep his promise of giving something to Lord Vamadev. Bali disagreed with his guru. And this shows one shouldn't follow blindly. Yesterday I was asked the question, yesterday night, that we are being accused that we're a cult. How do you deal with that? And I explained, first of all, you have to get someone to look at the dictionary and see what cult means. Cult is not a negative word. It just means a group.
Prabhupada uses sometimes.
Yeah, it says the Krishna conscious cult. If it doesn't, it just means a group. But now it has a negative implication. So, anyway, so in their minds, it means there's one big leader who everybody is, you know, turning the money over to and following blindly. And I said to this person last night, you know, are you a cult? He asked me, I said, look, just ask any of my disciples if they follow their guru and see. people are not following blindly, you know. They're disobeying blindly. Anyway, so... they're not following blindly. I mean, you don't see that in this kind of people follow blindly. I mean, in the early days, we were all just like young kids, whatever Prabhupada said, yeah, but now I think people, they think too, you know, they engage in hermeneutics, trying to understand Shastra by analysis, and, you know, because you got to do that to maintain your faith. Because sometimes you'll find certain things in Shastra, and then there'll be contradictory things somewhere else in Shastra, and you got to understand how to deal with it. Also, you'll just become crazy or lose your faith. So, Bali Maharaj said, the earth cannot bear the weight of a sinful liar. Shukracharya cursed him. The guru cursed the disciple to become bereft of all opulence. One time, Vasishtha Muni cursed his disciple to die. This is called King Nimi. King Nimi was doing a sacrifice because his guru had gone to the heavenly planets to collect donations from the demigods. And when the guru got back, he got upset. He did the sacrifice without him. And the guru said, I curse you to be near Deha without a body. And then Nimi, he cursed his guru. Says, here's your guru dakshin, you should die too, Guru Maharaj. And they both died. And King Nimi, he was brought back to life by the brahmanas, but then he said, I don't want to be brought back to life. I was in Krishna Loka, why the hell are you bringing me back here? And they let him go back, and they had churned his body, and that became Janaka the First. Remember, I told that story. That's a Ramayana story. And Janaka the First, Janaka the Second, Janaka the Third, eventually one of the Janakas was the father of Sita. So Bali tried to offer water, but Shukracharya, he made himself really small and put himself on the spout of the water pot. And Vamanadeva took some kusha grass and went, whoop! It's like sometimes the plumber has to put a snake, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
A snake? No, you don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like if your pipe is stuck.
Blocked.
You know, blocked. There's this curly snake thing they put, it's called the snake, the plumber's snake. They put in there to unblock it.
Guide wire.
What's that?
Like a guide wire.
Yeah, it's a guide wire, but it's like it's something that's not just a wire. It's a
spiral.
It's a spiral thing. And it sometimes a motor attached to it. So in the same way, Lord Vamana, he was using this plumber's thing to unplug the water pot, and Shukracharya was blocking it, and he put out his eye. And from that day forward, he actually became very angry with the Lord. It's described that he eventually took birth in Jagannath Puri, and he... started this whole bogus mantra, Jaya Nitai Gaur Radhesham, Japa Hare Krishna, you know, whatever it was. In other words, chant Nitai Gaur's name, but don't chant Hare Krishna loudly. It's only meant for Japa, no Sankirtan. And he had heavy arguments with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and finally, because this guy had so many followers, they were threatening the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, even though he was born in Jagannath Puri, he had to be sent out of Jagannath Puri to save his life.
Who was this guy?
I forget the name. His name, you can look it up. Something, anyway. But he taught this mantra, which there's actually a group of his followers who live, or used to live, right next to the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And they would chant Nitai Gaur Radhesham Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram. Oh, Bhaja. Sorry, I got their mantra wrong. Bhaja Nitai Gaur Radhesham Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram. And that this is their mantra, and they would chant it all night long and keep people, devotees, awake. And Prabhupada hated it. And the reason, what happened is, that Prabhupada hated it so much because they had offended his guru, Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, and it was bogus mantra, that Prabhupada basically changed the way we chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. Because in the beginning, if you hear Prabhupada's recordings, it's Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Prabhupada said, no more Bhaja. From now it's Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda. But the mantra originally is Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya. You understand?
Yes.
So Prabhupada didn't want, he was so upset with this word Bhaja, you know, Bhaja Nitai Gaur Radhe Sham. Yeah. And they're the followers of this particular individual. I mean, you can look up his name later. I forgot the name. Maybe someone online can tell me. No one online knows it. Anyway, so that was Shukracharya. It's considered to be an incarnation of Shukracharya. Really hated the Lord. You know, if someone puts out your eye, you're not going to really consider him your best friend. Right? So Lord Vamana, it's almost time to end, increased his size, basically, to the size of the universe. His first step was over the earth. Second step, the whole universe. And he kicked a hole in the universe. And the Ganges came in. And Brahma, it's described at this point, Brahma worshipped him with his Kamandalu pouring Ganges water. And Jambavan from the Ramayana circumambulated him.
Oh.
Remember Jambavan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this is way before Lord Ram's pastimes took place. Jambavan was Lord Brahma's son.
Yeah.
And he was Chiranjiva. He lived as long as the universe existed. And so he circumambulated Lord Vamanadeva in this gigantic form. And it's also described that Jambavan was partaking in Lord Ram's pastimes, not only one time, but other times too. So that's why he was able to remind Hanuman about his great powers when Hanuman had forgotten his powers and had to cross the ocean to find Sita Devi. So anyway, in spite of his gigantic size, the followers of Bali Maharaj tried to kill Vamanadeva. Kind of stupid, you know. You know, someone's the size of the universe, you know, you better offer obeisances at that point. And some were killed, and Bali said, you know, stop it already, you know, it's pretty hopeless trying to kill him. And there was nowhere for Lord Vamana to put his third step. And so then Garuda came and tied up Bali Maharaj with the ropes of Varuna. Lord Vamana said, you cheater, you promised three steps. Bali said, all right, you can take the third on my head, and I appreciate your chastisement. Prahlad Maharaj came at that particular point to witness the whole thing. And then Bali Maharaj was pushed down to Sutala Loka. And Lord Brahma said to Lord Vamanadeva, you gave him enough punishment already, you know. And Lord Vishnu praised Bali, and Bali was blessed that you become Indra in the future. But before that, you go to Sutala, and I will be there guarding you.
Mm.
And actually, it's described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that when Prahlad Maharaj is being praised by Narada Muni, the best devotee, he said, well, Bali Maharaj actually is not being guarded, he's being kept in, so he doesn't get in any more trouble. And then he's blessed with Lord Vamana to have no more illusion. The demigods retook heaven, and Vamana remains there as the younger brother of Indra. Upendra.
Mm-hmm.
You said Upendra. Little Indra.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Upendra. So, any questions or comments? It's actually 8 o'clock already.
Well, I did go into Jambavan's cave.
You went to Jambavan's cave?
Yeah.
Where was that?
Udupi.
Is that in Udupi?
No. Udupi is there.
Somewhere
in Karnataka. In Karnataka.
Really?
We were going somewhere and this guy took us. It's a deep cave.
Yeah.
In Karnataka?
Somewhere.
I mean, it's...
Lord Ramchandra's pastime.
Yeah, but when Krishna was looking for the Shyamantaka jewel, and that was close to Dwarka. Yeah, it was close to Dwarka, and Karnataka is not close to Dwarka. It's pretty far away. Well, that's Kishkinda. Yeah, that's Kishkinda. That's something different. But Jambavan.
Yeah, we did go. I'm not sure exact location.
if it was in Karnataka, it's not very likely.
Not in Karnataka, it's near Dwarka.
Yeah, it should be near Dwarka. The cave should be near Dwarka.
Yeah, we went in this cave.
That was near Dwarka.
I think near Dwarka. I remember seeing the Facebook pictures.
Yeah, it's near Dwarka. Yeah. Karnataka would be Kishkinda.
We went to Kishkinda also.
Really? You see all the monkeys? You saw Sugriva?
This is Porbandar, the
Jamuan. Oh, Porbandar.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that makes sense. It would make sense to be Porbandar, yeah. Because it would have to be closer to Dwarka than Karnataka. Anyway, and that's where... What? That's where Lalita Devi was, is Jambavati. So, what's the question?
You mentioned about when King Nimi, he was born...
Cursed
and bodyless. So, he went to spiritual world.
Yeah.
With constitution. I mean, he didn't have body there as well.
He had a body in the spiritual world.
Okay.
But he didn't want to come back and take his material body.
Okay.
You know, because what happened was that they preserved... I didn't tell the whole story today, but they preserved his body after his guru cursed him to die. In oil. And at the end of the sacrifice, the demigods came down and they asked the Brahmins, what do you want? And the Brahmins said, we want the king to come back to life. We need a king. And he came out of the oil and he says, I don't want to be back. And so then they took his body and churned it, you know, genetically. It's just a word for genetic engineering, you know, cloning, so to speak. Just like they did with Vena and got Prithu and Archie out of the body. They churn the body and take the genes. Somehow there's a thing called CRISPR. You've heard of this before?
Yeah.
CRISPR? CRISPR. No one's heard of that. CRISPR is like a device they use nowadays to manipulate the genes. So this is a very fancy version of it they had. Maybe with mantras. I don't know how they did it. And they were able to clone his genes. And his son came out. That's Janaka the First. And then Janaka had... Anyway, Janaka the First had a normal kid. Just like in the future, you're going to be able to have designer children. You go to the gene factory, you know, say, I want a child who's going to win the race and also be the most intelligent person on Earth. And, you know, whatever. And then you pick up your child a few days later from the factory. It's nice. I mean, you don't have to worry about what the kid's going to look like or be sick or anything. Wouldn't that be nice?
I'm sure.
And they'll say, I want one with six opulences. Really?
Most of the children would have the same qualities because our desires are more or less the same.
No, you have some variety. Like in vegetables. You know, like we have... It's not that everybody likes the same type of prasadam. Sometimes there'd be pizza children. Or, anyway.
Genetic testing.